Bookworm Banquet, Episode 6.
Radio CSS Media,
your source for family-centered content.
RadioCSS.com.
Another episode of Bookworm Banquet, where we strive to satisfy your literary cravings. I'm joined, as always, with my co-host, Nicole. Nicole, what's up?
Hey, JD. Nothing much. Just glad to be back to do another episode of Bookworm Banquet and to get to have a conversation about one of my favorite things, and that is reading the classics.
Perfect. You've been busy over there at the school, huh?
Oh, it has been a little bit hectic, giving me a headache, I guess, wrapping up the school year and trying to get things done. So, but it's always great to make time for Bookworm Banquet.
Of course, and we want to thank all of you out there who are continually listening, and we hope that you'll get some great information out of today's episode. We're joined by a guest. He is a narrator, and we're going to talk about the classics. It's one of our favorite subjects here, and we haven't really focused a whole lot on the show. On the classics, so we're excited to do so tonight. But before we get to that, I do want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/radiocss. There's thousands upon thousands of titles you can choose from for your mobile device, or you can play them right on your computer. Again, that address is audibletrial.com/radiocss. Or you can click the banner in the sidebar on our website, bookwormbanquet.com, to check it out. And we would appreciate those of you who do that, as it does give us a little support, and we want to thank Audible for their support of Bookworm Banquet. Well, our guest tonight is Mr. BJ Harrison. He's a narrator and a host of the Classic Tales podcast. And BJ, we're excited to have you here.
Well, I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, we're going to jump into some questions to get a little bit more information about you and about what you do and how you got into it. And then, as we said, we just want to just yak about the classics for a little while, and it's a subject that all of us are really passionate about. So, first of all, I wanted to know, how early did you become an avid reader, and what caused you to have such an interest in reading?
Well, to tell you the truth, in high school, I wasn't an avid reader. I wasn't a particularly good reader. I always wanted to know these wonderful stories that I kept bumping into whenever there was a movie about, you know, the Three Musketeers or something like that. I was always interested in knowing them, but I wasn't really a good reader. It wasn't until I was about 22, after I'd graduated from high school and started my career as a sculptor, that I actually got into audiobooks. I discovered audiobooks, and when I did that, it suddenly unfolded a whole, you know, world to me. Suddenly, these really thick, intimidating books, I could just cruise through them while I was working, and it was an effortless way for me to just do the things I always wanted to, and that was get closer to the classics. So, so that's how it happened, I guess.
I must tell you, BJ, that I do a lot of listening through narration because I am a teacher and I am busy and constantly doing things. So I know that the narrator kind of saves the life when it comes to getting through classics and reading when you don't have a lot of spare time to sit down and open up a book. So I can completely understand what you're saying. And I must tell you, having listened to your podcast, how what a wonderful narrator you are reading the classics, and how much I appreciate what you do as a narrator.
Well, thank you very much. It's really turned into a passion and something I really just love to do. And so, thank you. I'm glad that folks are out there listening to it and enjoying it.
Can you share a few of your favorite authors, and what is it in particular that draws you to their work?
Sure. Well, for years I considered Charles Dickens as the best author, which may or may not be true. I know I'm going to be grilled for that later on, I'm sure. But when I discovered really the audiobook of David Copperfield, that is my favorite book. And I try and read that one or listen to that one at least once a year. because there's so much to it. There is just so much substance within the not only the his vocabulary and the way that he phrases himself, but the way that he has characters. And that one also, it has the Dickens tragedy, but it also has a lot of positive stuff going on, so you don't have completely no faith in humanity when it's over. But Charles Dickens is one of my all-time favorites. But then again, I always, you know, I got into the classics not through what I was told what was good. I just got into it from hearing stuff and picking stuff off the library shelf. And so I really love things like, Edgar Rice Burroughs. I love some of the pulpier things, Dashiell Hammett. I love the film noir kind of classic film too. And so I like Ross McDonald and, you know, just all sorts of different things. And I try and have that kind of eclectic taste come through in the audiobooks that I produce. You could get anything from horror, from Sheridan Le Fanu to, E.M. Forster to Tom Sawyer, which we're doing right now. So
what was it that drew you to the classics rather than more contemporary works?
Well, as I was going through this adventure of discovering literature, I would every now and then try a bestseller, a New York Times bestseller, and I was consistently kind of disappointed because there was so much I really enjoyed about closing a book finishing Madame Bovary or something just wonderful, and then you'd pick something, and you know, I don't really want to mention some of the titles that really let me down, but I was just consistently kind of like, you know, that just it just didn't speak to me, you know. Mm-hmm. So I had to, you know, in Pulitzer Prize books that I wanted to see what it was all about, what all the fuss was about, and I couldn't figure out what I still can't figure out what the fuss is about. So anyway.
It seems like with modern day literature, it doesn't give you the satisfaction that a lot of classics did. They seem to be a little bit more deeper. Their characters a little bit more well drawn. The tale a little bit, more expressive. And I, like you, if something makes the news or it's making the bestseller list, I want to know what it's all about. What's the fuss? And I have found that I am not as satisfied reading modern day literature as I am reading, like, Dickens. You're not going to get grilled for loving Dickens here. Like, he is an absolutely wonderful writer. I personally love Great Expectations. I understand what you're saying. I just don't ever feel completely satisfied when I close a modern day book. Like, wow, that was just a wonderful story. I don't feel that like I do when I close, you know, a Bronte or, you know, something like that.
Right. I agree. And another thing that really draws me to the classics is they're not afraid to stand for something. They're not afraid to say through their characters or through their themes, the real, as you mentioned, the kind of the deeper opinions of these great thinkers. They're not afraid to say that, you know, they believe in God or that they believe in a certain system of beliefs or that they're socialist or that they're whatever. They're brave in speaking out what they feel to be true, and they have such gifts of expression that it really takes you along for the ride.
Yeah, that's true. I just finished, I don't know if you've ever read The Tenant of Wildfell Hall, but it's an Anne Bronte, and she took on a very she was very criticized for having written that book because she really takes on some chauvinistic ideas and relationships during that time. And she was extremely, even her sister criticized her for having written it. But like you said, she stood up for what she thought was wrong and wrote this book. And, you know, she had no qualms about it at all. And so I think for them, that was their outlet. You know, this is what I believe, so this is what I'm going to say.
Right. And I read Kate Chopin's Awakening a while ago, and shared that with my wife, and it just, that's her favorite book now. And it was just such a, at the time, it was, you know, it was similar. She was blacklisted and not encouraged to write such a feminist kind of view or something from that viewpoint of just the, you know, of a woman who's really searching for her identity. That was not really a topic that people wanted to listen to at that time. So there's just a lot there. There's a lot of meat there, I think.
And another thing about the classics is that, you know, for there's something about them that you can just read them over and over again. Very few, and I've read a lot of books, and very few of the more contemporary works are ones that I put down after I'm finished and then say, you know, I can see myself reading this again in 6 months or a year or you know, anytime down the road. Very few works have that pull to me, but the classics, I can read them over and over.
I agree, and consistently I'm seeing that. Like I mentioned, that's why I like David Copperfield, because every time I read that one, hey, I've almost got the darn thing memorized, but I still get something new out of it that I didn't know was there before, or because I'm at a different place in my life, I understand it differently. There's really just something to be, a lot to be gained from listening to or reading, I suppose, the greatest thinkers of our time or the last or other times, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, I think that is the definite characteristic of a classic, that when you pick it up the third, fourth, fifth, sixth time, when you read it, you catch something new in it. Yeah. And I think that in itself tells you this is a work that is going to last the test of time. And on that thought, are there any modern day books today that you think have classic qualities that someday will be a classic?
Well, like I said, I'm not really well versed in what's popular today. I mean, off the top of my head, I would say Harry Potter, because there's a lot there. I mean, I know that's probably, again, not what's I don't know. I was really blown away with Harry Potter, like the world, and I think there's a lot of substance there as well, but not obviously as much as the classics, but. But that's really all I could say. That's the only real modern book that I've really enjoyed, to tell you the truth. So.
Well, and I have to be honest, I have not picked it up and read it. So I wouldn't be able to tell you whether I agree with that or not, but I do know that they're making a splash in the world. So.
Yeah. Well, I had a lot of fun, realizing that, she took a lot of her names from Thomas Hardy, and, you know, Dumbledore is from the mayor of Casterbridge, and, you know, some of those accents that she used, stuff like that.
Now, I have to tell you, I have that book on my shelf. The only Thomas Hardy I've been able to get through is Tess of the D'Urbervilles. And that story just disturbed me for a classic tale. So I've not picked up a Thomas Hardy since. So he's quite the writer, that man.
Yeah, he has quite an attitude.
He does, and I cannot for the life of me figure out whether I like him or not. He's a beautiful writer. His writing is stunning, and he weaves an amazing tale. But it's just one of those classics that I wanted to throw the book by the time I was done with it.
Yeah, that's funny. Tess of the D'Urbervilles is my favorite one of his. So
really,
yeah.
Well, the only one I've read thus far. But and now I enjoyed it. But I was just so very frustrated by the time I got to the end, because it didn't turn out the way I thought it should.
Right.
I had my own opinion. But then again, I guess that's a characteristic of a classic. It moved me. I was emotionally drawn to that character and to that story, to the point that when I was done with the book, I was so upset that I guess it's a classic. It was able to move me emotionally.
You know what? I guess I'm not quite, maybe not as scholarly as the two of you, because I'm drawn more to the adventure type, you know, Jack London, Robert Louis Stevenson, Jules Verne, H.G. Wells, you know. So I really enjoy those. And you know what, BJ, one that you featured on your podcast not too long ago was the 39 Steps. Was that John Buchan or?
It's pronounced Buchan.
Buchan.
And I know that because I did it wrong, and I had a listener write in and correct me. So,
I honestly hadn't heard of that author before, and man, I was completely engrossed in that story. It was fantastic.
Wasn't that fun? Yeah, he's like one of those pulp writers, and hey, I'm all about adventure. That was, you ask what got me into the classics. That was one thing, because I wanted that great adventure. And I looked around and I just didn't see it. But I wanted to know the story of Tarzan. I wanted to know about Treasure Island and the Time Machine and 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and all those wonderful stories that that are out there. But, you know, it just seemed like the level of adventure even back then was so, I don't know. Because I guess what boys had to do was to read the pulp magazines. They didn't have video games. They didn't have TV. They had these magazines. So they had a real good, very good formula for tapping into what adventure was to boys, I guess.
So do you think that classics are losing their place in society? Are they being lessened in appeal to this generation, or it seems like there's a lot of people that don't even really read them anymore.
Well, I can only talk about my own, you know, my own experience. I don't know much about society or what's going on right now, but I went to public school and I didn't read the classics in public school. The ones I did read, were presented to me in a very unpalatable way, and so I took a lower English class, and I was reading Mrs. Mike and Cold Sassy Tree. While, you know, I didn't read, you know, I mean, you can read Huckleberry Finn. That's not going to hurt anybody. That's not too difficult. But it seems like they're not being taught anymore. It just seems to me, in my opinion, in my experience, it seems like the emphasis on reading classics as at least a beginning of what literature is, an understanding of that, it doesn't seem to be emphasized, I don't think, as it should be.
Yeah, I wonder if it isn't for the very reason that you mentioned previously, is that a lot of times these classics did take on controversial issues without concern for how it was going to affect the readers or the society of that day. And maybe it's just not politically correct to force these issues out into the open. Do you suppose that has an effect on it?
Yes. One of my favorite quotes is, you know, it's more important to be spiritually correct than to be politically correct.
I like that.
I think sometimes we get so worried about offending people and using the word God and using religion and things like that, which the writers of the 1800s, they didn't worry about that. That wasn't even a concern. Didn't even enter into their heads. They just took it for granted that their listenership would kind of go along with them. And so they could just kind of be themselves and not worry about offending here or offending there or all the demographics that we can get caught up in worrying about. They just kind of went for it. And I don't know. I think the worry about being politically correct today, it keeps us from being maybe as honest in our writing as we probably should be.
Well, and I think part of the reason that the writers of the classics wrote the way that they did was they were also trying to show morality, and they were trying to show right and wrong, and they were trying to teach lessons.
Yeah.
This is right, this is wrong. And, you know, they used those books and those ideas in, you know, schools and things like that. And so they were also lessons to be learned. And I don't think anybody uses literature like that anymore as much. That to teach morality or principles.
That's a great point. I mean, I've had a lot of people who enjoy my audiobooks write and say, you know, we listen to them as a family, and there are things that we can talk about. And you know, I'm reading a simplified version of A Little Princess to my little 5-year-old girl, and it's so wonderful to finish a chapter and be able to go down into why. You know, how was this character doing? How was Sarah? Was she nice to her? Why was she nice to her? Even when bad things are happening, she's still nice, and, you know, she has this character. And I mean, even to a 5-year-old, these works, you can even dissect them and pull them apart and get layers of meaning of right and wrong and character development and what is good to do and how it's nice to treat other people.
Well, and it's so true. There's so many classics that can be that are good for children, you know, like you said, Little Princess, or even The Secret Garden, you know, that teaches some real lessons about acceptance of people and love and hardship. Even Black Beauty, you know, teaches things about kindness. Mm-hmm. You know, Heidi, Anne of Green Gables, all of those stories, you know, are kind of geared toward the younger ages, but they are still teaching lessons, and they're fantastic stories.
Sure.
They're fun. They've got adventure in them. They've got, you know, all types of unique things, and they take kids to places, you know, other places in the world, and they're important, I think, to share with children. I teach 7th and 8th graders, and I make a point every year to read to them classics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we read The Call of the Wild. We read, you know, all those type of books, and I read to them, you know, just to give them that beginning, that understanding of the classics, that they're not boring, and they do teach lessons, and they are exciting.
Yes, I have a boy in 8th grade, and he, his English teacher, they were reading The Scarlet Pimpernel, and I let them, I let her have a copy of my recording of that, and they loved it, and she actually said that, you know, the class that she used the recording on with the professional narrator and everything, where, you know, they got more out of the story than if the kids just kind of read it on their own. So I think reading to kids and have it from a teacher, that's some of my favorite memories of school, is having a teacher read to me. I love that.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. When I was in elementary school, I had a teacher read us the entire Chronicles of Narnia. You know, that was so exciting.
Yeah.
To 5th and 6th graders. It was just really neat.
So what did your son think about having dad read to him in school?
I got to tell you, his voice has just changed. So he actually sounds a lot like me.
Ah.
And so a lot of the people there are like, it sounds like you're reading this book. This is weird. But he liked it. He thinks it's good. All my family is very supportive of the classic tales and what I'm doing. I'm very blessed that way.
I had a question that I haven't gone through your back catalog completely, mm-hmm. and what all you have on your website, but have you ever heard of the Thinking Machine stories by Jacques, and I'm not sure how to pronounce the last name, Futre?
No, I haven't.
Oh, wow, they're fantastic. Have you heard of them, Nicole?
I have not.
Oh, man, they're great. They're this character is kind of like the American Sherlock Holmes, and this guy just he tackles these different problems and of course always gets to the bottom of them. His name is Professor Augustus S.F.X. Van Dusen. So quite a mouthful there, but
seriously, wow.
But there are a whole bunch of short stories, and then he did write a few full length novels, which I have several of them. Just recently purchased them, and I haven't read them yet. But I found these stories when I was just a kid, the short stories, and they're fantastic.
Well, great. Now tell me what they are again. The thinking
machine.
Machine, because the man's a machine.
Exactly.
Cool. And it's Jacques. How's the last name spelled?
Futrelle.
All right. Well, I'll definitely give him a look. If it's published before 1923, he'll most likely show up in the Classic Tales podcast in a little while.
Yeah, one of the most popular one is called The Problem of Cell 13, was published in 1905.
Oh, great.
Wow. Now, I do have a question. How do you pick the classics you're going to narrate? Do you have like a list of, wow, this should really be narrated, this is what I want to do? Or do you have an actual catalog, or do you do like best, you know, all-time classics? How do you do this?
Well, I'm in the fifth year of doing the Classic Tales podcast now.
Wow.
So in the beginning, I went through all the ones that I'd always wanted to do. I'll just, you know, personal confession here. I secretly, when I was in my car after I was working, and I would listen to the recording of Basil Rathbone read The Cask of Amontillado, I would do it myself. I would copy him and do it just like him, because now that was just where it's at. So, of course, that was my first one, you know. So I had a lot of them like that. I've always wanted to do Treasure Island, because every Long John Silver, ever since I saw Tim Curry butcher it in Muppet Treasure Island, I had to do it. And you know, I didn't like Michael Caine's Ebenezer Scrooge, you know, so I had to do that one too. But anyway, in the beginning, I had several of them that I just, you know, always wanted to do. But then as, you know, the top lists wore off, you know, and I did the ones that everybody'd kind of heard of, I just read a lot and researched a lot. And a lot of listeners told me their favorite authors that I hadn't heard of. I mean, I had never heard of, I was not familiar with P.G. Woodhouse or G.K. Chesterton or Ayn Rand or, I mean, there's lots of just, duh, of course, you know, that most people like, well, that's the classic, of course. And
so do you, I didn't know this, so have you read some Jeeves, S. Jeeves books?
Oh, yeah. Everything that he's done before 1923 that has Jeeves in it, I've pretty much sought out and tackled. I have a P.G. Woodhouse collection that has, it's like 14 hours long that I'm, it's actually quite a good seller. And people really love my Jeeves stuff. I don't know.
Somehow missed that. I will have to look that up because I'm a huge P.G. Woodhouse fan. Everything he's ever done.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to mention that and say to the listeners, you've got to grab that collection because it's phenomenal. It's really good.
Well, let's hope so. It's cheap. It's like $8 or something like that for 14 hours. So yeah, it's a pretty good deal. Wow,
definitely worth it.
That's a very good deal.
All right. So tell us how you got into this. You fell in love with the classics from audiobooks, and then it translated into, well, I'm going to record my own audiobooks and then a podcast, and now your narration work is sold on audible.com. How did that happen?
Well, a friend of mine had, and this is 5-6 years ago when podcasting was a very new technology, kind of a new thing. I had a friend of mine who'd had a podcast. It was a triathlon podcast, and he wrote his own content, and it was his passion, and he was featured on the sports page of the iTunes Music Store, and it was incredible, you know. And so he told me that I should do something like that, and so I thought about doing a short story podcast. I'd kicked around the, you know, I'd always thought, you know, because in audiobooks, I always follow my favorite narrators. If Patrick Tull's reading a story, well, that makes it that much better. Or if, you know, whoever. And so I thought, what if I kind of, you know, made a brand of myself and kind of did this on my own? So I borrowed a computer. I didn't even have a computer. I borrowed a computer from my stepbrother. My friend lent me his old recording equipment that he hadn't used, you know, didn't need anymore. I didn't even have the internet. I uploaded them at work, at the scenery shop that I worked at. They had an internet connection. So, and I uploaded the first three episodes at the iTunes Music Store. And then what happened was iTunes kind of, I guess, picked me up. They featured me on their homepage. And at that time, podcasts were about the only thing you could do with an iPod. I mean, they barely had video back then. Mm-hmm. And so to be a featured podcast was a big deal. So they featured me on their main page and on their arts page and on their literature page. I'm still on their arts and literature pages. But after that, people kept tuning in, and it just kind of took off. I guess they don't tune in. They subscribe. But by the time I had done episode 7, which was The Pit and the Pendulum by Edgar Allan Poe, I was the number 3 podcast overall, right behind This American Life.
Wow.
I think it was like 50,000 downloads a week, which is just off the charts. Right now I've leveled off at about, you know, anywhere between 12 to 15,000 every week. But my recording of the Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad was a 3-part, you know, series that I did. That had 100,000 downloads.
Wow.
So that's just, but see, at that time, I didn't have anywhere to tell anybody to go. I didn't have a website. I just had a bunch of free audio files as podcasts, you know. So it took me a while to get enough material to you know, create a website, sell them through a website, and then also to get the attention of audible.com. And then, which happened, and we have a really good relationship now. Actually, they hire me from time to time to do books for them, so it's kind of just taken off.
Were you surprised at the sudden success?
Well, of course, I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know any. I didn't know anything about this whole industry before. I didn't know really how to record audiobooks or how to, do any of this. So I was, I don't know. It seemed like as you look at the idea and you examine it before you take the dive, it seemed like, yeah, it would work. And I kept inspecting it and it still seemed like a good idea. And most of my ideas don't look good after a while. So that was it.
That's fantastic. And again, the website for our listeners is www.thebestaudiobooks.com. And if you'd like more detail into BJ's story, check out the About page there. It's got a very thorough bio and About page, which is pretty uncommon for a website. So that was cool. I did want to mention also that I had a question regarding the premium podcast downloads. And how does that work for someone who purchases one of those audiobooks that's released in that manner? Can you explain that for the listeners?
Well, sure. That's actually something that that I kind of came up with because I wanted to sell these audiobooks, but I didn't have time to take a week off of work, create the audiobook in its entirety, and sell it. And so the premium podcast is kind of like a magazine subscription where you pay an amount, and then you get an audio a text file that has the RSS feed for the podcast in it. And so you buy the podcast feed, essentially, mm-hmm. and then through the podcast feed, every week I'll release two episodes of that book. We just finished Phantom of the Opera. So people could go to the website, pay $12, get Phantom of the Opera, and that way I'm able to get some upfront money, get something going, so I don't have to wait until the end of time. And it makes it so that I can also, like The Man in the Iron Mask, which was 36 hours long, if I had to wait, I would never be able to do that. Mm-hmm. So that's why I did that. And that's kind of how it works. It's a great way for people to get automatic updates, to all of the all of that content.
So anybody can purchase this at any time, and that at the point of purchase is when that subscription will begin, correct?
Yeah, at the point of purchase, they get the text file, they get the RSS feed, they go into iTunes, they subscribe to that podcast, and then however many episodes are out at that time, like right now, Phantom of the Opera is over. If somebody goes right now, they'll get all of the episodes. They're all released.
Oh, so it's not staggered for them if they purchase it after the fact?
No, it's not.
Okay.
No.
Well, I can tell you I'll be going to get The Phantom of the Opera because that is also one of my favorites.
So that was a lot of fun.
Listening to that. Yeah. How do you – I know that reading out loud, because I do it a lot to my students, I sometimes stumble over words. Do you have to do a lot of corrections, a lot of retaping?
Oh, yeah. And that's one thing I learned because I was the guy who was also the editor. So I kind of trained myself how to record it in such a way that it was easy to edit later. Mm-hmm. So I go back to the sentence that starts when I messed up, or whatever to do that. But yeah, I have to, I just finished a book called New Threats to Freedom. It's a nonfiction book for Audible. And that one darn near killed me because I don't know about political anything, and so I had to look up all these words of pronunciations of dignitaries and all of these different things where, if I got one of those wrong, I'd sound absolutely ridiculous. So you have to get it right. But anyway, now I know all about Abu Ghraib and all that stuff. It's wonderful.
I feel your pain as a history teacher. I have to pronounce a lot of very strange names.
There you go.
So
yeah.
I feel your pain there.
Yeah, it's wonderful. But it's doing that book. I was also let me just remember how much I really love doing my own thing. I just love doing getting immersed in all the characters and everything, and making sure that that the classic really embodies what I want this book to be like. It's funny, after all these years of doing this, I still really am passionate about making sure Phantom of the Opera really nails it, So.
Well, and as a listener, I thank you for that because, like you said, the narrator can make or break the story. And so having a narrator that cares about the story and understands the story and feels the story makes a huge difference for those of us that listen, because, you know, that's how we're getting our classics sometimes.
Right. And some narrators that I've run across in listening to them, I don't know whose brother-in-law they were. I don't know if it's because the classics are like low on their priority list or but I tried to listen to The House of the Seven Gables, and whoever it was had this lisp. And when Miss Hepzibah came,
dear,
it was just sickening to hear Miss Hepzibah come and talk to me like that for like 12 hours. It drove me crazy. So yes, it does help. Thank you for that. I'm glad it's coming. Glad it's coming through and my lisp is gone. So
it is.
So.
Well, for you listeners out there, I want to let you know that we have an affiliate relationship with the Classic Tales with thebestaudiobooks.com. So if you are interested in purchasing any of BJ's narrations, which I highly recommend, there will be a link in the sidebar on our website and in the show notes for this episode, episode 6. It'll take you right to his website. And again, I highly recommend checking those out. Again, some of my favorites that he's covered is he did several of the Sherlock Holmes stories. The 39 Steps, which again is a completely engrossing story. If you haven't read or heard that, you know what? Even if you have read it, buy it anyway. You'll enjoy this narration.
It's actually still available for free through the webs through the Classic Tales podcast right now.
Perfect.
So I'm about to take it down, but yeah, if people are listening, go get it. Absolutely. So,
all right, now it's time for Nicole's bookworm fact, and she's going to dive into that. And BJ, if you have any thoughts on the fact, feel free to jump in.
Great, thank you.
And now for something completely different.
And now it's time for Nicole's bookworm fact.
Well, today for my bookworm fact, I figured since we were talking about classics, I would kind of give a brief description on what it is that makes a classic. How do we say that this book is a classic, and what is the criteria? First and foremost, it must stand the test of time, obviously. This is a book that has been written decades ago, and it's still around, it's still relevant, and people are still reading it. As we've already mentioned, it's a book that's read over and over and over again. Also, it usually has some type of moral lesson attached to it, some type of value, principle. You will also find good conflict and resolution in these books, where the characters are usually overcoming odds or real-life situations that are usually not easy, and it's always about the rising above. It also is well written, has an effective language, it is understandable, but usually it's a story that flows very well as far as words are concerned. It also has what is called universal appeal. This means that most societies can read it because it deals with things that are relevant to everybody, themes like love, hate, death, life, faith, morals, principles, all those things. And it will affect not just only United States, but countries around the world or wherever the book was written, it will affect all aspects of society. And it will have characters that you can connect with. These are characters that are real. They're characters that seem, they're easily affected by life. And as a reader, you can connect to those characters. And last, you will be able to see in a classic influences from other authors, other writers, the world around them. And a classic will also influence authors and the world around it. So that's my criteria for a classic.
Well, that's wonderful. That's great. I spent 2 years in Hungary, and I noticed that once it was really amazing to me when I saw Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn translated into Hungarian. That half a world away, modern day Hungarians could get that and appreciate that. So it's a wonderful thought. Thank you.
Yeah,
and that's totally accurate. It's something that appeals to humanity in general. It speaks to the human condition in some level, and so I appreciate that as well, Nicole.
Well, that's what makes a novel a great book, the classics, because, like you said, they appeal to all of us in some way. You can find something in a classic that you will be able to connect with.
Well, Nicole did her homework for this episode, and I will admit that You're not going to get a bookworm tip from me this episode because, you know, to be honest, I couldn't find anything that I felt was worthwhile to share with you. So I don't want to give you something that is not going to be up to par. So we're going to just skip the bookworm tip for this episode. And one more time, I want to thank Audible for their sponsorship. They're offering the listeners of the Bookworm Banquet podcast a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial, just to give you a chance to try out their service. And as you heard, you can find BJ's work on audible.com. And so you can check that out. Go to audibletrial.com/radiocss. That's our network. So it's audibletrial.com/radiocss. Well, again, our guest today was BJ Harrison, narrator and the host of the Classic Tales podcast, and his website is thebestaudiobooks.com, which you must check out. BJ, thank you very much. We appreciate you taking the time to join us tonight.
Yes, thank you so much, BJ. It was wonderful talking to you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right, if you'd like to get in touch with us, our email address is feedback@bookwormbanquet.com. We love hearing from you. Also, leave a review in iTunes if that's how you found us. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, Miro, Stitcher, or via any other RSS aggregator. There's links for all of those on the website, which is bookwormbanquet.com. Also, leave notes or leave a comment on the show notes. And we also have a feedback line.
And that number is 623-688-2770. We do love to hear from our listeners, and we'd love to hear what you had to say about today's episode. This was kind of different. We didn't really do a book review. We just reviewed a genre, the classics, and had a wonderful guest on with us, and we would love to hear what you have to say about that.
BJ, is there any particular project that you would like to bring up at this time? And if you'd like anybody to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Feel free to just contact me at support@thebestaudiobooks.com. Just like you mentioned, very, very well. Feel free to check out my website, and I'd love to hear how you listen to the audiobooks, whether you're a homeschooler, a working professional, whatever. Just love to hear from you.
Thank you again, BJ, and we will see everyone next time.